Welcome, everyone. I would like to welcome you all to Sunstone Session 256, Podcasting from the Edge. 3 years of experience with Mormon expression. I would like, before we begin, to remind you all of a few things. So, if you have your phones, please put them on silent or vibrate or completely turn them off, because if they ring during the presentation, then a heron will fly into your house and make a mess of your pots and pans, and you don't want that to happen. So now I would like to introduce this session's panelists. I don't think that they really need introduction, but just in case, I would like to introduce John and Zilpha Larson. John Larson holds an MBA from Weber State University and a BA in linguistics from BYU. John is a host of Mormon Expression Podcast, the executive director of the Whitefield Educational Foundation, and board chair for the Post-Mormon Foundation. John currently resides in Lehi, Utah, with his wife, Zilpha, and their two children. He works in software process engineering, hence why he was able to almost single-handedly troubleshoot all this stuff. Zilpha Larson holds a BA from BYU and is currently a graduate student in instructional design and technology at the University of North Dakota. Zilpha is a host of the Mormon Expression podcast as well. She and her husband, John, also, I have already explained that they live in Lehi, Utah with their two children. So without further ado, I'd just like to say to the panelists, and if we have any questions that come from the audience, please speak into the mics. I know that you may have problems with speaking to mics. You might not have done that before. But try to remember this so that it can be recorded and that your voices can be picked up.
So we only have one mic?
Unfortunately.
You can take it off of there, though.
That might be nice. All right.
You're going to sit down?
I don't know. That's how I usually do it. So welcome, everybody. Hopefully, what we have to say will be interesting to you. Some of it might not be. I don't know what you're interested in hearing. But so, do I have a clicker or not? Does that not work?
No, the clicker doesn't work. Maybe we could dim the light.
So I'm going to start out with sort of. A general review of where we've been, what we've done, who we are, kind of maybe what it's meant for us and for other people, the podcast. So it really was an idea that John had to get a podcast out there about Mormon issues that was maybe a little bit more egalitarian than things that had been out before, maybe more diversity in discussion, and a variety of topics and approaches. So not only would we have panel discussions, but also interviews with authors and thinkers in the Mormon realm. So the three main things we focused on were culture, doctrine, and history. And we wanted to explore everything we could about all of those. So the way John started out was by putting out onto the boards that he was part of sort of a call for who wants to help out with this podcast that I want to start. So the initial takers, Tom, Niall, Jim, and George, who later went by his first name, Garen. Actually, I think he went by Garen George for a while. So they were spread out all across the country. John and I, at the time, were in North Carolina. And when John was first working on this idea and he would tell me about it, I was sort of skeptical because I wasn't part of the liberal post-Mormon online community at all, really. I mean, like, I had an account on Post-Mormon, but I didn't post there and I didn't really look there. So it was all new to me, and I never listened to podcasts. I barely knew what that was. But I was supportive of him spending a bunch of money and getting things set up, and I was sort of interested to see where it would go. And I helped him find the music for it, and also came up with the name. So initially, John had no idea how to do a podcast, and he bought some books, including this one, and just started looking stuff up on the internet, trying to figure out how to do what needed to be done to pull this off. He had to figure out how to link it to iTunes. He needed a web presence, so he set up a web page. Was that the first web page you created like that? Like you had to sort of get in there and figure it out? Yeah. We had to find some music that was available for us to use, and we wanted it to be peppy and not too hokey, but I don't know if we got it right at first. you'll see. I'll play a little snippet of the old song, and then we changed it later on. Sound quality was a continuing issue, especially where people were spread out all over the country and just doing it out of their living rooms or their offices or their bedrooms with crappy equipment that they could afford. It was something that was a struggle for a long time, and it was important to John especially that the podcast sound professional and as professional as possible. Sort of the script of how the arc of the podcast would go, we had to figure out and get it flowing. At first it was a little awkward. I'll play it. Well, why don't you play the first, can you help me with that, John? The beginning of the very first episode.
Which one?
It's the episode number one. If you can. So you'll hear how nervous John was and how quickly he talks, and the panelists sort of pick up on that.
You don't grab part of the file.
I didn't get it all?
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, so he was like, Niall, this is Niall, George, this is George, and then he said, Tom, yo, what's up? So that sort of like helped ease everybody's nerves when, and then the original music was like, dun, 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 dun. And then we went to see a word. It was after 15 episodes. I mean, like, you don't remember that old music probably, because I didn't, but it was there for 15 episodes. These are the first five podcasts. So you can see where the idea was to make it clear that even though we may be post-Mormons, we're not anti-Mormons, and we want to discuss both sides of things, and we're not blind to good parts about the church. That was the idea getting going, but also that we're going to discuss difficult issues. So after the first podcast, these are some of the things that we got. So the issues discussed are largely ignored by the LDS community and need more airtime, which we totally agreed with. Is that me? Keep it back like this. And a lot of people feel very alone when they're transitioning out of the faith paradigm of Mormonism, at least as they're going through that crisis, especially if they have believing spouses, believing family members. It's really a difficult time for people, and they feel very alone. This is a concern that people have right off the bat. Where are the women? On the other hand,
a lot of people have.
On the other hand, it was sort of normal for the podcasts to be dominated by men up to this point. There hadn't really been a strong female voice in the independent Mormon podcast world. And this is from John DeLynn. He had some suggestions. This is after episode 2. He basically said, yeah, I'm glad you're doing this. You need some diversity, especially women, TBMs. And we had noms. I mean, Tom and George were pretty much noms. They were active. So anyway, those were good suggestions. And there's the rose. I decided that they were right. And even though I was reluctant and nervous, and I didn't feel confident in my ability to be entertaining or anything, I agreed that there did need to be a woman, and I happened to be around, so I might as well step up. This is in our living room in North Carolina when we first started. It was an open living room, so it wasn't even like a, you know, a cozy living room. It was big and open. And this was after I became more involved. It was always a concern getting our kids to bed and keeping them there. There were a few times when they came in and they wanted to participate, and it was not usually appropriate. There's one episode, I think, that something about a sorting hat got put on the end. My son wanted to play Harry Potter, act out a play or something, and John was going to be the sorting hat in the play. So it didn't take very long. We got Mike. You guys, he's sort of notorious, but he's a TBM, and he was willing to play. And that was huge. Glenn, he came along next, and then we've added Brant, Matthew, Heather, Amy, some more roses. These guys have been really helpful, even though you probably haven't heard of all of them. Behind the scenes, they've done quite a lot of work and have made a big difference to the podcast. And then a whole bunch more people who have helped out in one way or another.
Nice beauty shoulder.
Thanks, Dave.
That's a pretty sexy shot. So, there was a lot of milk when we grew up Mormon. That's basically what we were fed all the time, and we were waiting for the meat. Well, it was time to eat some meat. So these are some of the historical topics we've covered. Nauvoo Expositor is something that people tell us all the time was kind of blew their minds, that podcast. We did several. Tom really tackled the Mountain Meadows Massacre. The Dream Mine is a favorite for people. King Follett Discourse. That was one of the ones that blew my mind. And the First Vision, polygamy, we've done a lot with that. Oh, the Masonry. 4 lovely episodes with George Miller on the Masonry and temple changes, all that good stuff. Doctrinal topics. I'm sure that there are some doctrinal topics that are interesting that we haven't covered, but this is just a sampling. I think we've dug into a lot of topics and cultural. Some of these are more meaningful to us today because they happen to deal with what we're immersed in and what we're struggling with. And we've had some awesome guests who have been really fun to have on, all these folks. And these are some of my personal favorites. The Mitch Horowitz, A Cult in America and the Rise of Mormonism, was really fascinating. Civil War prophecy, for me, when we got to this one, I was still thinking, I don't know how Joseph Smith got that one right, because, you know, I was to the point where I didn't feel like he was, a prophet per se, but there was this Civil War prophecy, and he got it right. So I actually did a lot of research for this podcast and learned a lot about what was going on at the time, the fact that there was a newspaper, and I actually found the newspaper that would have been in Joseph's hands on that day, talking about the descent of South Carolina, the day that he gave his prophecy. So, and it was a while until the Civil War broke out, but this stuff was on people's minds already, and it was already an issue of slavery going on. Will Bagley, the interview that Tom did with Will Bagley, that one just cracked me up. And especially when Will was talking about his interview with his bishop, and his bishop suggested some ideas to him that he'd never even considered before, some sexual ideas. The conversation that I had with my friend Nathan from high school was an important one for me for a few reasons. One is that I hadn't had a chance to talk to him thoroughly about his journey and what had happened to him, especially what happened to him on his mission. And the other thing was, this really helped boost my confidence in being able to do hosting, or at least attempt it, because that was really scary for me and it was really hard. But because of the good feedback that I received from this one, I was able to get some more confidence in doing more. The 14 Fundamentals of Following a Prophet, that one's probably most people's one of their favorites. The Pullman Talk, oh my gosh, that one totally blew my mind. the church would go to such lengths for such a, it seemed like such a innocuous, thank you, an innocuous sort of statement that was made, and it wasn't acceptable. Reasons to Stay, Reasons to Leave, that was, I think, a lot of people that meant a lot to when they were transitioning and trying to figure out what to do, if they should come or if they should go, what they should do with their kids. And children in LDS families, huge for women in the church, especially because our lives were oriented around being mothers and taking care of children. And just thinking about children as individuals rather than a fetishization sort of these little angels was healthy for me. Mormonism and Race, I really loved what's his name?
Darren.
He was awesome to have on there. Sorry, guys. During the course of the 3 years, we've had some series develop. The Dummies, 17 different topics we've discussed that way. Top 10, we had 10 episodes. Conference reviews, we've done 6 of those, but that equals 18 because each one has 3 episodes. Then the essay contest, we just did that one this year, and that's always one of my favorites because we get to hear from a variety of perspectives, and people put a lot of effort into those, and I think they're awesome. 101. Yeah, we only did 2 of those so far. Probably more to come. Those are the more... what else do we need to do on those?
Tobacco, obviously.
Tobacco, coffee. Yeah, we're going to do coffee at a coffee shop.
And sex part 2.
Sex part 2 for the...
The varsity level.
We actually accomplished 4 of the book clubs. They didn't stick around too long, but we did do 4. And the reason we dropped those is because we didn't feel like we were getting a lot of participation from the broad audience, and that was sort of the point. So we let that one drop, and then we tend to do feedback episodes, in which we get feedback from listeners, and we talk about that, and we talk about what we're doing with the podcast and our ideas and where we're going. Yeah, so we've been taking stuff off the shelf for the last 3 years, and I think that it has been extremely valuable for us and for a lot of listeners. And one thing that people have been really desperate for is a community connection, and to meet people in real life and to feel like they're understood and that they have friends that are similarly minded, at least. We started with the first live event. That was episode 100, which was a year, a little bit over a year after we started the podcast. That was right up here in the Crimson Room. We did like a game show for that, and it was really fun. It was embarrassing to me when I pulled out John DeLynn's name for the games. I don't know. I just wasn't expecting it, and I didn't know what to do with that name, so he played a game. That was fun, but it was strange for me. And we had the Will Bagley lecture, which Tom said, oh, I love that picture. It's just makes me laugh. And The lecture series, we haven't done any more of, but we plan to. So if you have an idea of someone who would be good for a lecture, we would be open to that. I would especially like to get a woman to lecture, so we can, you know, have more roses among the thorns. Then we did the Mormon Fight Songs for Dummies. Did anybody go to that? It was a lot of fun. The sound was screwed up, and so it kept squeaking and stuff, which was a bad thing. But we had a whole lot of fun, especially practicing the songs and sort of rocking them up a little bit. Greg and Hans and Manuel was on the drums, and then Brent was our chorister. I don't know if we'll do one of those again, but it was sure fun. Oh yes, and Praying Systems. And that is apparently the look I give John way too often. And that was fun to sort of set it up in a Roman fashion like they do in the movies. We've had lots of picnics. We just do casual get-togethers where there's nothing really going on except for conversation and people meeting each other and talking.
Where's the picture of Michael Shermer grabbing your ass?
That wasn't a live event, but that was a nice reminder. The weird thing, though, when we met Michael Shermer and Sam Harris, was I wasn't expecting them to be quite so short, and I felt a little Amazonian. So the cruise, we just went on this in January with a bunch of Mormon Expression listeners. That was a lot of fun, and we hope to be able to do another cruise next year, probably out of Miami, right? Maybe?
Yeah, maybe we can talk about that a little bit more, because there's an alternative on the table that's kind of fun.
Right. We did record a podcast while we were there and got everybody to participate. If you have, or most of them, if you haven't listened to that one, I would recommend it. I think it's a pretty emotional podcast. It's like a Emmy testimony meeting sort of thing. And we just got back from our camping trip just last weekend, right? Went up to Monte Cristo. We had about 16 or 17 families and had a really good time. The kids, you cannot imagine what it means to these kids to have other people who are other children who they can relate to, who they know. It's okay to say, oh my God, or, you know, whatever's okay with their parents is usually okay with other kids' parents. And they feel really comfortable, and they had a great time. These are some of the positive feedback. I think John's going to go into some of the negative, more controversial sorts of feedback. Mine's more positive, like propaganda. This is all the good stuff. And then we'll dig into the bad stuff. I'm a nom, married to a TVM, buried in a TVM family, surrounded by a TVM world. Your podcasts are a lifeline to sanity. I found myself in a crisis of faith back in the summer, and was so grateful to find your website a few months later. At a time in my life where I have truly felt isolated and alone, in my quest for truth and answers, I found people I could relate to and who truly understand what I'm feeling. Thank you so 1, 2, 3, 4 much for doing this podcast. It's hard to find people that are willing to embrace critical thought and are willing to acknowledge and appreciate the positive aspects of Mormonism at the same time. This podcast is intelligent and thought-provoking, as well as very, very entertaining. Blah, blah, blah. I'm just an insignificant guy here in Georgia, but I, for one, really appreciate all you've done. I hope that they continue for a long time to come. It's great for me to feel a connection, even though I've never met you. And those emails have meant a lot to John and I, especially when we're feeling sort of overwhelmed, or like when the work becomes more than the payoff, and then we get an email like that, and it means a lot. Do you wanna get controversial on us?
Sure. All right. So Zilpha talked about the she sort of did a reflection on the podcast. I want to take my few minutes here and do sort of a reflection on the world as we see it from the gully of the podcast. So I intend my few minutes of talking to be sort of a long, drawn-out, labored metaphor, like I tend to do, that's semi-coherent and mixed. All right. So, I'm not going to talk much about the podcast. I'm going to talk about the world out there as we interact with the world and have interacted with the world for the last 3 years. And I'm going to do it in three sections: the good, the bad, and the ugly. So we're going to talk about those three things. But first, from my position, you know, Zilpha and I left the church before we ever started the podcast. The last time we went to church was in 2005. That was 4 years before we started the podcast. And when we were leaving the church, we started reading, and it's the same kind of thrill you get the first time you look at porn. You know, like you're looking at something that's a little exciting, you know, you're not supposed to be looking at, and you start discovering all these things. And we've been taught this history, and whether you believe it or not, you go into the new stuff, and you find all of these amazing, bizarre, interesting things, and it's just one after the other, and there can be quite a thrill there. So both Zilpha and I developed this love and interest in Mormonism. But what's always been bizarre to me is I feel like somebody at a Star Trek convention who is a Star Trek fan, but everybody around me believes it. And I feel like I'm down the rabbit hole, and I say, you know, this stuff is interesting and fun, but you need to stop learning Klingon, because there's other things you can be doing with your time. And then so that's sort of my take on it. And people ask all the time, they say, why don't you guys just walk away? And it's this endlessly fascinating thing. And there have been, in the history of mankind, many religions started, most of them lost and gone to us, right? We have them only in cuneiform or whatever. But here we see the birth of a religion at a time you don't really want to start a religion. You know, first the printing press, and now the internet, and it's, you know, strike two. I don't know what's going to be the third one. But it gives us this really great view into the minds of these fascinating folks, really. To sort of start the conversation on the outside, let me read you. I actually, between you and I, the guy who sent this to me is here. I was worried he was going to be in this room. But this is copied right straight from a message. Hello, John. I recently started participating in on the ex-Mormon Facebook groups. This is a very strange world. I'm being messaged by women who live in my area from the borders who want sex. These are married women. I keep getting drawn into private chats where they talk about how much they are about to leave their spouse, and it's always because they say they want to fool around with other people. They create private groups for swinging and people who want to cheat on their spouses. Every conversation I have had with just about every female from one of these groups has always turned to sex. Is there like a way for you to do a show on these people? I'm not exaggerating, John. So we have encountered Mormonism in all of its glory and all of its parts and parcels and everything in between. So let's talk of the good, the bad. The good I have titled Anarchy in the CK, Anarchy in the Celestial Kingdom. The bad, the enemy of my enemy is not my friend. And the ugly, the rise of the middle way. All right, so I have actually movie clips to set each one of these off. So let me find you the good movie clip.
Let's see.
Are you the Judean People's Front? Fuck off. Judean People's Front. The People's Front of Judea. Judean People's Front. Can I join your group? Now, piss off. I didn't want to sell this stuff. It's only a job. I hate the Romans as much as anybody.
Are you sure?
Oh, dead sure. I hate the Romans already. Listen, if you wanted to join the PFJ, you'd have to really hate the Romans. I do.
Oh, yeah? How much?
A lot.
Right, you're in.
The only people we hate more than the Romans.
Can we say fuck at Sunstone? I'm not exactly sure. So the good in my little belabored analogy represents the people who have sort of walked away and have started their own thing, because the podcast sort of fermented and grew out of the DAMU, the disaffected Mormon underground, and We see this, and the reason I played this clip is the worst thing you can be as an anarchist is a popular anarchist, because there's a certain amount of, you know, like the crabs in the bin, you know, there's a certain amount of, once anarchy starts forming into committees, there's something fundamentally wrong about that, and it kind of doesn't sit well with everybody. So there was a golden age of Mormonism. And the golden age of Mormonism really occurred after polygamy and after the two world wars. Because what happened is the church fully embraced Americanism and American exceptionalism. And during those 50s, we were right on. We were just in sync. And Reader's Digest loved Mormons and people who knew them. It was still sort of obscure, but they were clean and they were American, and you know, J. Edgar Hoover loved them in the FBI, and we were just quasi-essential Mormons. And then there was the rise of counterculture, which turned the church into the counterculture movement. The problem is, at the end of the 80s and the 90s, you know, the culture at large adopted the positive elements of the counterculture, which left the church out in the cold, because it had so solidified just ridiculous stuff like facial hair, and that it became increasingly divided from American culture, and that's the track we're on today. But what the church was talented at was a divide and conquer. The church has handled heresy and apostasy since day one, and they became very, very good at it. very good at marginalizing heretics and getting rid of apostates, and sometimes chasing them out of the frontier, right? So with the rise of the internet, the tools they had formed for that suddenly all fell to the wayside. They became very dull. And when I see the church talking today about when they reference, they won't reference anybody directly, but when they reference them, it's this sort of confusion. When I listen to conference now, when I see the press releases, like they don't know what to do. The game has changed on them, and the inside speak is not working now on the heretics and the apostates. So there's this massive amount of information that has been controlled in a certain way, and now as information starts coming at them in ways that are not polemic, because for so long it was this black hat, white hat. It was Ed Decker versus, you know, the Salt Lake City, and they were going to show down. And then you get all these guys who come in who can talk positively or intelligently about the church and be able to do it in a way that's reaching. Now, this is something I don't pretend that the we and those of our ilk did anything new. This is something that Sunstone's been doing for years. But the church and dialogue, of course, but the church really hit a blow in, what, 93 or whenever, when the No Symposium directive came out, and Sunstone has never been the same since. But Sunstone was able to, the church was able to effectively kind of marginalize it and isolate it in a way that it's not accessible. I am amazed at how many people who are in their 30s that I talk to have never even heard of Sunstone, which is just incredible to me. But now there's the church's Google problem, right? It used to be Rick Santorum's Google problem. The church has a similar one, right? So the problem with the anarchy and the problem with all these different groups, and why I played the splitters video, is among anarchists, where the only thing that people have in common is their former relationship with the church. That is a very weak bond. And there's been elements that have sort of moved the movement along. By the movement, I just mean people connecting socially. But like Facebook is now dividing things like almost infinitely fast. Like, because it's so easy to form a new group and have a secret group and then split this group and split this group and split this group to where there's not a unifying force. Now, what's fascinating about the podcast, and it has to do with psychology. I mean, we did not evolve really to read. It's a byproduct. But we did evolve to sit around the fire and share stories and share culture and that sort of thing. Are at the heart of it. So what I think is interesting is a podcast can have more impact saying things in a dumber way than's been written like 44,000 times. But because it's there, it's in your head. It's a worm ear, and it touches you in a way that can't be touched otherwise. And Zilpa hinted at here, the real power of the podcast has not been any particular piece of fact or any sort of well researched thing. It's been that catharsis. So many people have come to us and said, I felt like I was going insane because the church portrays people and marginalizes people who don't think commonly, and they start actually literally questioning their sanity. And then they hear this voice out there, and one catalyst moment is when I called Packer a dick, and it for people it just suddenly, well, you can't do that, and then it starts to shed away and realize I can process this in a more human way. I can process this in the way we process other things. There is a paradox of bias, okay? The paradox of bias is this. If you have a bias, you may or may not realize you have a bias. We all have biases to some extent, right? So let's suppose there are five people in a room talking, and they each have a bias in an argument, and one of those is unbiased. Would the other four be able to recognize that the one is unbiased? And the answer, I think, is no. The paradox of bias is that unbiased appears biased to the biased. And they will all think that they're unbiased. So as we try to, in the podcast, put a position that is fair to Mormonism and yet is open to criticism, it's something that is recognized as criticism from others, and even as criticism from inside these little splinter groups. when we first started, I was really popular with evangelicals until they figured out more what I was after. And I had to tell some of them flat out. I said, I'd rather be a Mormon than an evangelical. Your religion makes no sense. Because of that unrecognized bias, that there was when we did the mass resignation this summer, I went on to the CARM board, which is a big evangelical discussion board, and there was this heated discussion going on whether or not they should support the resignation, because on the one hand they wanted to get the Mormons out of the cult, but on the other hand we were a bunch of damn secularists, and do we support those guys or back and forth? And I talk about this when I'm talking about the good of people awakening and being more honest to themselves, whether they stay in the church or not, is because we're so inclined to keep splitting ourselves into groups. We're so inclined to keep saying, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to recognize that guy's authority. I don't want to recognize their power. And it seems like there's been lots of movements online that have happened. And then as they start gaining power, they start gaining influence. That mere fact alone among the anarchists runs them to another place. And it becomes a continued problem that we deal with, and that the hardliners in the church have been able to capitalize on. Let's talk a little bit about the bad.
I have to remember which clip I wanted.
This one's a little bit hard to hear because I'm sure it's an illegal clip off the internet. But. Do you recognize the young Jeremy Piven there? So I don't know if you can hear he just got dumped by his girlfriend, so he's talking to the guys at the Gas and Sip, and you know they're all telling him things he needs to get over it, and you know he says to him, if you're all so smart about women, why are you here drinking beer in the parking lot of Gas and Sip? And you know, think for a minute. They say, by choice, man, by choice. So the bad, the enemy of my enemy is not my friend. What I have found is the podcast has been this magnet for crazy. I talk about the evangelicals a little bit. They're crazy. Mormonism creates crazy. Has anybody noticed that? And most of it is not like the violent sort of... There is that. But, I mean, that happens all over the place, right? But there's a garden variety crazy out there that is just fascinating. And we've gotten lots of letters from prophets, seers, and revelators of all stripes, and this is something that took me years to leave, not to realize. Not everybody leaves the church for good reasons, and if you were an asshole before you left the church, odds are you're still going to be one after you've gone out. I'll give you an example. We've met people and we've investigated different things to talk about. A few months ago, Zilf and I were talking to a couple. They were part of the polygamous movement down in Lehi. What's his face on the TV show used to live there. They have a Sunday school. I can't remember what the name of their group is. They're a lot more liberal. They have a Sunday school and all that. These guys were out of it, and they were at the time, no doubt, no exaggeration, trolling like singles boards, like Match.com and stuff, for broken, divorced women to try to get them into the polygamous cult. And there was just levels of crazy coming out on top of levels of crazy. And I remember sitting there looking at them thinking, you guys need to get back in the church, or you need something. You need somebody to tell you how to live your life, because you can't handle any of this on your own. You're not good on your own, you know, because a lot of people leave the church because they have an independent streak, and they're free thinkers or open thinkers, and you know, like the question of morality comes up. Most of the people I associate with outside the church are very moral people, meaning they're very conscious of that. Doesn't mean they keep the same morals, but they're very thoughtful of that. But there's a whole other group of people who aren't, who are just bouncing around. And unfortunately, both the church and the sort of ex-Mormon community haven't served these folks very well. And just having something out there that they can cling on to doesn't support them, because we've had run-ins with followers of prophets. I've got one guy he's on something new. About every 2 months, he sends me, his new guy he's following. And I've threatened that I'm going to put all these emails together and publish them. But some of these guys are kind of litigious, so stay away from Nemelka's group. you have to be careful. There's this group out there that the church is now always called the Church Strengthening the Members Committee. A lot of people don't understand what the Strengthening the Members Committee does. I mentioned in the top of my discussion about heresy and apostasy. The Strengthening the Members Committee is concerned with heresy and not with apostasy. And you're probably looking at me maybe wondering what I'm talking about. I am an apostate. I left the church. I didn't leave it alone, but I left the church. They don't give a rat's ass about me. They never have. Because they've already marginalized, my voice effectively. John DeLynn is a heretic, and the church pays a lot of attention to him. So the Strengthening the Church Members Committee pays attention to people who are getting revelations about polygamy inside the church. They're paying attention to people who are ostensibly giving information to the fold and not criticizing the fold. And there is a lot of that in the boiling underground. And in 3 years, I've seen some of that stuff come up, and I can't imagine what headaches the church is dealing with every day. You see that big tower down there, 27 stories, and I've often wondered, what do people do in there? This manual is 15 years old. And it's just, what are all these guys doing? But can you imagine the problems that the church is dealing with constantly? I saw a form one time. It was a disciplinary form for the priesthood, and it had on it, I think it had state president, bishop, area authority, other. If you're an elders' quorum president, you don't even make it onto the form. So you can imagine all these bishops without training getting, locked in rooms with these young girls or whatever else. Just the amount of headaches the church is constantly dealing with. And to be able to see some of that from the podcast and just this constant boil. The dude we were talking to, him and his family, he became a polygamist from simply reading DNC 132. He was a straight Mormon, read DNC 132, and then found the polygamists. He wasn't recruited or anything else. It was just that alone. All right, I want to go back, before I transition to the last one I want to talk about, to one of the early... We had a lot of bumps along the way where we ran into things or had fights or political messes. One of the first big bumps for the Mormon Expression podcast that caused sort of a shitstorm was one thing I said. We were actually doing a combined podcast with DeLynn. I think it was about 2 years ago. And DeLynn had just got done. You guys all know who John DeLynn is, right? Okay, so... DeLynn just got done doing one of his presentations where he said, we're going to create a safe space for ex-Mormons and Mormons, and it's going to be a safety net. And in the podcast, I said, Mormon Expression is not safe. That was my... And meaning that we're going to talk about these facts, and we're not going to sugarcoat them for you. Everybody's grown up. And it was sort of tongue-in-cheek, and it was sort of a play on what DeLynn just said. But it upset some people when I said that. And it sort of opened up this area of what I think is one of the key questions in the world of the edge of Mormonism that we're all on. Let's look at the last clip.
Walk on the road. Walk right side. See? Walk left. sooner or later, people squish just like grape. Here, karate, same thing. Either you karate do yes, or karate do no. You karate do gesso, just like grape. Understand? Yeah, listen. Now, ready?
Mike Tannehill and I get along very well because we both see Mormonism exactly the same. We both, you know, if you ask, you know, John Larson, does the church believe in polygamy? I say yes. If you ask Mike Tannehill is a very faithful sort of conservative Mormon. If you ask him, does the church still believe in polygamy? He says yes. It's when you start getting in the middle of these things that you start getting plummeted from all sides. It's sort of laughable but unfortunate. And we've all been there from some time to the other. Some of us were crossing the road. Some of us try to pitch tents in the middle of the road. But it's a difficult place to be, and you're going to get beat up from both sides. I gave the analogy one time. I have been vocal oftentimes in my criticism of the middle way, and for reasons I'll talk about in a second. You know, a friend was saying, there's friendly fire. You're hitting people who are your allies, and you know I said, you know, when you have a standard war, World War II, you got the German troops over here, you got the American troops over here. 99% of the dudes fighting that thing out with hand grenades and rifles were just farmers or mechanics or stuff the day before. They really didn't care about global politics or all that kind of stuff. We all get swept up into these big causes. And the odds are that if those two soldiers were to meet in favorable circumstances, they would share a beer together and be perfectly happy. But the fact is, if you're wearing the uniform of the enemy, you're going to get shot at. So there's people who say, well, we're working covertly. We're working within the church. We're wearing the vestiges of the church to try to change it from inside out. And I would say that the change that is attempted Margaret Toscano is a great example. I think it's public knowledge now she's been rebaptized, but she has not.
No,
it's
Maxine.
Oh, Maxine Haynes. I'm sorry. Yeah, Maxine was baptized, but the model fits. There are folks who are out there who are saying, I like the church. I love the church. I want to engage in the church. And here is what my concerns are with the church. It's perfectly open. There's others who are out there saying, no, this is a coercion thing. What we're going to do is, on one side, we are going to represent ourselves this way, and then we're going to operate this way. And the problem is that it causes certain problems. When we talked about anarchists a minute ago, an anarchist is somebody who really rejects the narrative and rejects the authority. So if you're an anarchist politically, you might reject the fundamentals of common law and the legal system and that combined heritage, that story behind why we want to do this. And then you reject the authority, right? The problem with the middle way, for those who are trying to live it, is they reject the narrative, but they don't reject the authority, at least not overtly, because once they reject the authority, then they're out. They're not the middle way anymore. And it's a really tough position. Now, why am I bringing it up in this presentation? Because for some reason, for 3 years, there's been a real attraction of those who are sympathetic to the middle way to the podcast, because the podcast sort of settles there. And there's been a desire to convince Zilpha and I or to get us on the side of the middle way. And personally, or emotionally, in terms of allies, I have no problem with any of these folks, but I've had to say no, just because the same reasons I criticize the church, I have the same criticisms about many of the middle way practices, because they promote unhealthily some of the same problems the church has. And so you know, if I take a stand against that, you know, let's say overt sexism, or you know, the denial of homosexual rights, I'm gonna scattergun that pretty wide, because that's what I do rhetorically. So what we have is, we have this three-generation thing that's breaking down. That we have what I'll call the Sunstoners, who have a soft place in my heart, obviously. And the Sunstone generation tends to be the baby boomers. they tend to be folks who are very aware of all these issues. I pointed out to a lot of people, there's nothing new being discovered that wasn't published in Dialogue magazine sometime between 1964 and 1980. It's all there. It's all been done. It's all known out there. But there was this generation that chose to keep interacting with the church, chose to keep preserving their Mormon identity, and then tried to explore this and find new avenues. So we'll roughly say that's people 50 and over. There's this group between 50 and 30. I'll call these guys the drama queens. And that's sort of the generation that I'm in, which is we're going to have problems with the church and everyone's going to hear about it endlessly. Blah, 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 blah. They're going to put podcasts up. They're going to put blogs. And we're going to make sure you know every little sensitive issue we have with the church and make sure all of our relatives are all painfully aware of what they can and can't do and what they can and can't say. Then there's this next generation under 30. They just don't give a fuck. They're just walking straight out the door, right? And it's really this very interesting dynamic, as we see here playing out at Sunstone, as you know, we're trying to engage folks and trying to engage these things. So the podcast, what conclusion do I have? I actually wrote a conclusion here. So many people leave the church for many reasons. Some of them are not very good. I say that. But we're all looking for validation. We're all looking to sort of understand this narrative, this thing we're all swept up in. And I see this arc of people as they either re-engage the church, all at Don Bradley, or they walk out of the church. There's this Kubler-Ross sort of engagement where eventually people have to accept the fact that they were Mormons. And you'll see people reach this healthy, it's a more healthy state plateau if they've left the church where they've come to terms with it. But usually that's not the end plateau because they're usually still mad that they grew up as Mormons. Then there's this other plateau when they kind of say, that's part of who I am. Now, I personally reject the idea of calling myself a cultural Mormon because I really don't think or act like one anymore. But I've come to peace with the fact that I spent 34 years in the church and I'm still interested in the church. And there has to be that thing that we're all looking for across the spectrum. And that's why the podcast itself is, I think, was powerful because it sort of allowed us to engage that discussion and sort of bring these different folks together, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we all need community more than anything else. It's in our DNA. And that's why Zilpha showed the events, and we continue to have events. We have in November we're going to Las Vegas. In September we'll be in Phoenix. We're looking at the next cruise. And we really don't have any agenda there other than people to meet each other. And I think that's been the power of Sunstone also. I mean, there's been a lot of great things here. But I tell people over and over again when they're struggling with the church, you just got to get out there and find other people. It doesn't matter what you talk about. It doesn't matter what you do. But somebody who's sympathetic of where you came from. And when all the dust settles, that catharsis and that community that the podcast is able to get together, that's the only thing that matters. Because of all the stuff that Zilpha showed you, there's nothing out there that we did that's unique. There's nothing that we did that's particularly interesting in that it wasn't done by others before us. So those are sort of my observations about the world. I think there's a lot left unsaid, but this is supposed to be a panel, not just a lecture. Andrew, you want to
open it back up?
It's not really a panel in the sense that I don't get to say anything. What we can do now is we can open it up to questions, and then you and Zilpha can answer them. When they asked for chairs, I said, I don't know what chairs do, and they said, you're supposed to do like a few things. You're supposed to make sure that things start on time. That your panelists and your presenters are here on time. Well, so much for that. That all of the audio and visual equipment is set up, and so much for that. But we are on time. We will be leaving on time, so I think that's a good thing. And I also get to ask the first question. So I was trying to think if I should ask something difficult or something easy or whatever, and I think I'll just ask something that I think should be easy. Sure. And this could be for either of you. John, you've mentioned throughout this presentation that it's important to have community. And earlier you also mentioned, like evolution-wise, that people kind of evolved to tell stories, but they didn't really evolve to, read. And so it's kind of interesting that you were involved with a lot of the forums, but you didn't start a blog. You started a podcast. And in many ways, podcasts have a lot more involvement, and there's a lot more research, and there's a lot more stuff that has to be done for that. So what do you think about podcasting as a medium versus, say, blogging or, you know, writing articles or books or things like that?
Well, I think verbal communication is much more powerful. I'll give you an example. If you take a course in university, you'll usually have a textbook written by somebody who's almost guaranteed to be smarter and more well-read than your professor, but you'll generally learn more in the shorter sessions of the professor talking than you will from the textbook, because that's, like I said, the way our brains are wired to work. For me, I've done some writing. Writing is hard for me. It's a painful process, and talking comes a little bit more natural. You're right. I doubt there's less. You know, I don't. We do a lot of research on there, and you know, you feel kind of like your butt is on the line when you're talking. You can't go in and quickly revise an audio recording. But I just think it's a more powerful medium, and it touches people a lot more. It's just the human tenor of the voice. That you can hear people on the podcast often tearing up, and you can hear them interacting with each other, makes it so much more powerful, because otherwise the emotion and all that is stripped away. It sort of seems abstract, where the podcast seems very human.
And whereas print and books used to be the more permanent method of sharing information, as opposed to telling stories around the campfire or even radio shows, podcasts, they're out there indefinitely. And so there is a new, more permanent audio way of transmitting information, audio and audio.
Okay, so now that was my question. For the rest of the questions, since we only have one mic and there's a lot of weird stuff going on here, then what I think we should do is kind of come to the front area, so you can ask your question up here, and then we can pass the mic back to John and Zilpha. So since you're already up in the front, you get the first question.
I've heard from time to time you mention little snippets about your family, and on one occasion, I think you mentioned that you were in your family gathering, and the topic of what you were going to do in your next podcast come up, and you said we're going to talk about Joseph Smith and polygamy or something like that, and there's like this dead silence. I may have missed a podcast somewhere along the line, but I'd be interested to know your parents and your sibling relationships, how they reacted to your coevolution.
That would have been Zilpha's family. My family has never acknowledged that the podcast exists. My parents have made a point of never listening to one of them. As a matter of fact, they asked me about the resignation. You know, there were some articles that came out, and my mom was chiding me about that we had planned this thing we hadn't told her. I first of all reminded her that I was 40, and then I had to actually read them the article. They wouldn't read it. I said, you should hear the articles. I sat them down. I read it to them. I have two older brothers and a younger sister. We get along marginally well. We don't have a lot in common, and especially after Zilpha and I left the church, it's never come up. The topic of my apostasy has never come up with any of my siblings. So it's sort of weird, right? Which they probably see it as an aggression, but I know that a lot of Mormons don't like talking about these sort of things, and they're not equipped to talk about them at all, unless they've gone off their own and researched it. So I sort of see it perversely as an act of hostility to even bring it up, or I reflect that they will see it that way. Zilpha's family, her parents were converts, so they're a little bit more open to it.
Yeah, when I first left, my mom was extremely disappointed and mad. But she's sort of come around lately. I was with her the other day, and she even told me that she had listened to the conference episodes, and she appreciated. She was like, it was really shocking to hear people talk about the conference, like from different perspectives, and she was sort of had her mind blown by that. So I'm hoping, you know, she's a smart lady. Maybe she'll come around. I don't know. But my brother has lately been pinging me on Facebook about he was very disappointed in the way I chose to officially resign, and he feels like I'm not giving the church enough of a chance, and that the church does does all these good things, and so I should ignore the few bad things and just focus on the good things. So this is the conversation I'm currently having with one of my brothers. And incidentally, our whole family is getting together, all 7 kids and their spouses and kids, for a week and a half long family reunion from hell. Starting today, and we're not there.
The only thought I have is that most, in my opinion, most Mormons hate church. So the fact that, like, we would listen to conference, this blows their mind. You know, say, if I didn't have to listen to conference, I wouldn't. And speaking of which, have you ever noticed that a lot of religious people, as long as I'm not being offensive, I'll keep doing it. Religious people say, if it wasn't for church, you know, why aren't you out, like, raping and robbing brand banks? And I was like, well, 'cause I don't want to. Is that what you want to do? All right.
I just had a follow-up to that, though. Is your relationship, your relationship is splintered since you left, but what was it like before?
Like a lot of Mormon families, we would sit around and bitch about the church all the time. And there was about 2 or 3 years before I left that stopped. And I talked to my dad later, and he said, it's because we learned you were serious. And then because those concerns became deeper, they became more internalized. It wasn't the surface complaining. So it was a mutual thing. So they could tell years before we actually walked out of the church that something was wrong because of just the way you interact about the church. So when I would bring up complaints in that period, they were more serious. They were more heavy duty. And so it sort of quieted down on that front.
But non-church-wise, did you spend time with your brother? Did you do things before?
Not much. The two things my brothers do, I love them. We don't have fights or anything, but they're really into sports, and I don't follow sports very much, and they're really into the church. And they're into doing the church, not like talking about it or examining it. So it's different.
I was just going to add that, like a lot of Mormon families, there's no conflict. Conflict is almost not allowed, so anything difficult that happens in our families is brushed under the rug, and it's just, you forget about it and you move on and you don't discuss it. So a lot of it has been very friendly, both before and after, but not maybe necessarily very deep and sincere.
Thank you. You mentioned that the church does an effective job of marginalizing apostates, and I think that's true. I just wonder, as a critic of Mormonism, do you not feel that, or it seems to me at least, that by resigning and going outside of the church, your standing as a critic becomes even further marginalized? Do you not see it that way?
That's a good point, and that's probably why we only recently resigned. I mean, it was a long-running question and debate among ourselves, and I still fully support both opinions. The strongest argument for resignation, I think, that I hear, is that then the Poor Relief Society president doesn't have to worry about you anymore. You know, because you're always going to be on those roles, and they always have to juggle you, and you know, and then whenever there's a changing of the guard, then you know, there's a new initiative to go reactivate the inactive, and so it's a sort of an act of mercy. On the side of your local ward. But yeah, it's an interesting question in Mormon studies. You know, we have darlings who are coming in from the outside, who have been able, and these are really great scholars, and then you have to be on the inside, but it's sort of like the turncoats are not well regarded in the realm of Mormon studies. And they have to fight a little bit harder to get their voice recognized, I think. So it does sort of marginalize your career that way a little bit. But I think one of the reasons we finally pushed through, and I'll let, you know, Zilpah was more the champion of that than I was. One of the reasons we finally pushed through is saying, in a sense, we keep playing to those paradigms. We keep playing these roles. It's, you know, I talked about myself being 40 and my I'm only 39. And my mother, but we do that. I mean, don't you find yourself when you go back home, no matter how old you are, it's like, and you watch old, you know, you watch a 60-year-old uncle interacting with this 87-year-old mother, and they go back into these roles that were defined like 70 years ago, and we all do that. And so part of the need as we look is to break these paradigms that we all have in the church of these roles that we all play, these stereotypes. You come to some sort of swearing because you're an apostate. And you know, you do things like you just don the role. And I think part of the goal for resignation was to sort of break that down. I don't know if it's effective, but I think it at least started the conversation.
Yep.
I have three things. First of all, after 20 years of going to Sunstone, I think you're second on the list for dropping F-bombs behind Paul Toscano, so you're in good company. I didn't see there.
I'm here, and I've never said that.
It felt like it.
I'm number one. I've never done that.
I read your mind, though.
That's okay. I just wanted to...
Sorry, I guess I had it wrong there. The second thing is, what kind of, like... non-Mormon podcast. Do you listen to podcasts more now than you ever did before? And what kind of non-Mormon ones do you listen to? And the third one is, what kind of thing really surprised you when you first started out on this track? Something came along that was really, really great, and you did not even think this would ever happen.
I listen to a few podcasts, but they're mostly funny, and they don't have anything to do with Mormonism. Probably because it's sort of like, kind of looks like it's my job. I have my regular job, and then I do the Mormon stuff. So unless something really new idea is coming out, then I'll listen to them. So I don't listen to a lot of religious podcasts that way. The thing that was surprising me, which brought up to where I went, is we receive virtually zero commentary, one way or the other, or criticism from believers. We actually get quite a few emails from them that say they like the podcast. We apparently have a lot of believers who listen. Our criticism all comes vehemently from middle way folks. It doesn't come from the ex-Mormons. It doesn't come from the Mormons. It comes from the middle way, which is why there's always been an ongoing churning topic. Because and there's a reason for that. That's the most interesting question, right? The middle way. It's sort of like, once you leave the church, or once you shift your testimony, or once you get thrown out of the church, or whatever, what are you going to do now? Where are you going to land? How are you going to raise your kids? What are you going to believe? That is the interesting question. And as we see different models pop up and come down, the reason they receive so much, you know, whenever we have a Facebook group, and whenever anybody posts anything about like Mormon stories, because you know they're the 800-pound gorilla in the middle way right now, those things always get 100, 200, 300 comments. And it's not because there's a lot of venom what's the opposite of when you were in this? Or whatever. It's not. It's because it's such an interesting question to everybody. How do we re-engage our former selves? How do we re-engage that? And I did not realize that before I started the podcast. I had no idea that world was even out there. I had sort of left the church and moved beyond. I knew there were people who were in and out for various degrees, various reasons, but I didn't realize what a churn that question is and what a social force it is.
Okay, so we are about... almost out of time. I can't see the clock, but
it's
I know.
But
we have time for one or two more questions, depending on how long the question is. And here we go.
First of all, on behalf of my family, thank you for everything you've done over the last several years. That's made a big difference in our lives and for the better. Sorry to ask a dark, sinister question, but we only ask because we kind of, you know, vicariously care about you. I wonder, you mentioned some of the crazy that can come with some of this stuff, and there are certainly some more sinister elements to our Mormon past. I just wonder if you've ever felt threatened or afraid, if you've had people throwing rocks through your front window, or if you've ever been scared or felt like something bad is going to happen from crazy people, because we sometimes breed them.
And I hope the answer is no, never.
Oh, well, I've probably been more sort of afraid than John has. Even before we started the podcast, just the fact that we left the church, I almost expected, you know, like eggs, you know, toilet paper, something. I expected some kind of reaction from somebody in the ward that knew that we had left. And then after we started the podcast, and that never happened, and then we had run-ins with people like Namalka, and not really run-ins, but just touching into that world was sort of scary. After the mass resignation, I was a little bit afraid. I sort of kept an eye out on cars that sort of slowed down as they passed our house or things like that. But we've never been threatened, and we've never had anything happen to us.
We've had a few instances of sexual harassment using aimed at Zilpha that we've had to take care of. So Zilpha, for some reason, tends to bring out the lesbian in a lot of. she gets a lot of kind of creepy fan mail from women who always say they're straight at the beginning of the. But no, I mean, you can't get Mormons through their home teaching, let alone, you know, go brick a house or something like that. I've never really felt very, very threatened, and really, I've never even seen. Any of the negative interaction with any of our Mormon neighbors, any of our Mormon friends, the wards, everybody's been respectful. I know those things happen. I know I have enough friends who've had problems. I've never seen it. People have always been pleasant.
I did want to clarify something because I realized what you're talking about, the F word. I've never spoken that in a speech. But I did at Affirmation. This was in 1994. I was asked to speak there. And I did analyze that word and its usage in American culture. And that got picked up by somebody on the internet, and without, there was no authorization, there never is, and they posted it, and maybe that's what you're referring to, but it would be not in my nature to actually
use it
in a speech at Sunstone. Any more than I would at church, because there would be cardiac arrests and things like that. But I did want to ask this question. I have actually two, and maybe you can address both very quickly. One is, the thing I notice about the blogging and all of that that goes on in the podcast is the lack of vetting of information. I mean, there's just a lot of information that, as a scholar of Mormonism, in many respects, I think, gee, these people aren't aware that of this historical event or that. So there's that whole issue of the verification of information. And the other question was something that you said, John, and that is, you said there are those who accept the narrative, they reject the narrative, but they accept the authority, and then there are those who reject the narrative and reject the authority. Have you considered those who accept the narrative but have problems with the current authority? Are there any of those left?
Oh, yeah.
And whether how do they appear in all of this demographic?
Yeah. There's a lot. There absolutely
are. The polygamous couple that we were talking to would be an example of that, where they still accept the whole narrative, but they reject where the current leadership is on the narrative.
The largest branch on our family tree are the Jack Mormons, right? They outnumber the faithful, and they outnumber the ex-Mormons by a long shot. You'll know you have a Jack Mormon because you'll be at the bar drinking in a beer, and if you say, damn that Joseph Smith, they'll punch you in the face, right? But they're still there drinking a beer with you. So there's tons of people who accept the narrative, but don't necessarily fall into authority. And then there's a more academic, more nuanced one, which I'm sure you're sort of saying, that the church is authoritarian, it's corporate, but there's a lot of beauty in the doctrine, in the dogma, wherever you want to pick that stuff. And yeah, I think there's a lot of it, a lot of them are here, and they're very intelligent, very thoughtful folks. I think they're wrong sometimes, but
the first question.
Which one was the first
vetting.
One? Oh, vetting. The issue is we have a weekly show, and most and all of us have full time jobs, so we do as much work as we can. But if you listen to a daily radio show, you know how they make mistakes, their producers. That's sort of this the same level. We do our best, and I think for the most part we're pretty good. And we've had some apologists whoever contacts say you got this wrong, got that wrong, and my response is usually, all right, let's go on right away and you can call me out. But I think we usually tend to mess up in the details like a lot of people do, but that's just a function of the production schedule. And the last thing I was going to comment on is on the F-bomb. That's not something I do normally. It's sort of because, like Zilva said, we like to pull the curtain back sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things of the podcast was that catharsis through through breaking taboo. And I think it's sort of an illustration of the first time you hear that, you know, it's sort of shocking, and then you realize that, oh, well, that doesn't necessarily negative effect. It'll throw some people off. But that, I think that's a theme in a narrative, a thing that we picked up throughout the podcast, is that we are branching into taboo, right, but showing that you can approach this from different aspects. And I think, you know, in some of your writings, it's a topic that you've explored, maybe not explicitly.
Well, actually, I say that word all the time, and, you know, because it's just that I wouldn't say it in a public speech because I don't want people to run out or
get
hysterical because in Mormonism they do that. But I don't have any, I'm not offended by it. I just wanted to correct the record.
No, it's a valid point. Andrew?
Can I ask one more very quick question?
If it's very quick.
Less than 5 seconds. What's the future of the podcasting community?
That's a great question because it goes to sort of Paul's question. The strain or the work of producing a weekly show, it's fun, but it can be a lot of work. You know, we have full-time jobs and all that. And there's other things we're trying to accomplish. So the value add from continuing the podcast versus the weekly, you know, we decided it's time for us to step back from that. So because of the miracle of the internet, all 213 episodes will stay out there indefinitely. And they're still getting a lot of hits, ones that we recorded years and years ago. So Mormon Expression is staying active as a podcast. We're just reducing the production schedule. So we, you know, we're our next show we're recording live in Phoenix. I brought that up on the 29th of September. And
our next show is Sunday.
And we're recording our last weekly one Sunday, Murray Park at 1 p.m. If anybody wants to come down,
this Sunday,
like in 2 days. So I think, and then we've started some new podcasts. Throughout this whole thing, we kind of branched over that. We incorporated, we set up an institution. We have about $10,000 in the bank that we want to use to help get the word out. Our sort of our rally cry is accuracy about Mormonism as much as we can get it. So we've started the Feminist Mormon Housewife podcast. We're starting a... We have a podcast that's in Spanish. And we have some other things we're in negotiation for. So... The work goes forward, and we're still busy. It's just that weekly production schedule I'm going to back away from.
Thanks.
And I think that we're out of time. I want to thank you all for coming here. If you look in your schedules, I'm pretty sure that John has another...
What's the address? Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. So check that out, and you can hear from him more.